Also, and she's requested Rebecca to sit in for her. Can I just check if we have any other apologies? With Grace not being here, we don't know. Honourable Father?
Yes, Honourable Lawrence says he won't be here, so he might be a few moments late. But he is coming.
Yeah, but let us talk about that, because you see, last week you also told me that you are leaving. And then when I looked at the minutes, you were marked present.
I was in
but we'll talk about that.
Okay.
When we deal with the other items. The agenda before us is the opening remarks, apology, the briefing. Then we need to look at that oversight report from Mpumalanga. We hope we're presenting it for adoption in this meeting. And then we need to adopt our minutes. And then we have announcements. I don't have any announcements, but we'll leave it on the agenda in case there are some. Honourable Lord, we have been informed that you are still involved.
It was a quiet trip.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Honourable members, I don't think there is anything else to add to that agenda. So I'm presenting that agenda to the meeting. That's how we will follow that. With your permission, Honourable members, we have received an apology originally from the EFF for the absence of the Honourable
Fauda.
Now you see, this is where reputation follows you. We know that the Honourable Fauda has been quite consistent in terms of attending meetings. And therefore, I've arranged with the secretaries that until such time that we get notice that he's better, that original invitation about his ill health would serve as a standing invitation to this committee. We won't do it with everybody, but morning, Minister, how are you doing? Good. But we'll do it with the Honourable Bada. So that's the only apology there that we are putting to you in this meeting. We are ready to start. Minister Patel, Deputy Minister, I've done the welcoming, but welcome to you as well. I have been informed that Minister will be with us briefly, do what he has to, and then recuse himself with an apology. But he will do that himself. Allow me to introduce to you the members of the select committee. We normally do it when we get to question time, but because Minister Patel is joining us early, let's do it now. Right there in the corner, the guys, or rather the gentlemen, Honourable Chabangu is very strict on that. We are not guys, we are honourable members. The honourable member on the corner is Honourable Lucy Huehu from the Eastern Cape. So you don't spell it the way we spell it in the UK. Honourable Huehu is from the Eastern Cape. Then we have next to him the Honourable Willem Faber. He is from the Northern Cape. Then we have the Honourable Jaco Lont. He's from the Western Cape. Then we have the Honourable Boingedlu Ntebe. He is from the Northwest. Then we have the Honourable George Ntimunye. He is from Mpumalanga. And we have the Honourable Princess Clara Tikgale, who is from the Limpopo province. We have our support staff here with us, researchers and I'm trying to get the other term.
Content advisor.
Content advisors. One content advisor, one researcher here with us. Supeka, who is sitting here next to me, is the secretary of the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations. And we have the same members on the two Select Committees, though we have different chairpersons. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, but due to the ill health of the chairperson of this committee, I'm standing in for him. We appreciate the fact that we have received your presentation well in advance. It has enabled us to browse through it, familiarize ourselves with it. We have received also from our researchers and content advisors their input on the presentation, and we look forward to not only receiving the presentation from you, but also engaging with it once the presentation has been done. Thank you very much, Minister. We are in your hands now. You'll delegate who speaks after you, but we'll complete the entire presentation process before we engage with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honourable members, and it's a pleasure to get to know members of the Select Committee. I want to start by recognising that while the annual performance plan of the department is a key roadmap for us on what we need to do in the next 12 months, we won't achieve much of what we seek to do if we can't build effective partnerships with provinces. And so it's a special honor for us, I think, Chairperson, to be able to have the full time and ideas that a committee like this bring together. So it is, in addition to the important role of oversight, it's also to be a forum for ideas that can help to enrich our work. Honourable members will know, and I'm sure that a number of departments must have come through the committee, that the annual performance plan that each of the departments have prepared seeks to connect more strongly with the medium-term strategic framework of government, that the overall plan that we have for the five-year period of the administration are really given expression annually through the APP. We've prepared an annual performance plan for the department that takes account of a range of issues, and I've asked the Deputy Minister of Economic Development, who leads our work at provincial level, to share with the Select Committee the contents of our presentation. Now, Deputy Minister Masuku, in addition to leading our work at provincial level and being responsible for a range of other areas in the ministry, he has also engaged quite extensively over the last few years at provincial level. So he has a fair sense of both the challenges that provinces face as well as the opportunities that exist there. And I think therefore it is apposite that he should lead the presentation. Chairperson, I'm going to stay for a little bit of the presentation and perhaps even at the start of the engagement if it's possible. But I would really like virtually immediately, with your permission, to hand over to the Deputy Minister, who will sketch the context of our work, what has informed the presentation and the annual performance plan itself, and is also providing some contextual information on performance, economic performance at provincial level. So may I then, with your permission, ask if the mic could be surrendered to Deputy Minister Masuku.
if you will allow me, just before we do that, to apologize, members. The IT people were here trying to set the system up, but the system is dead. So attempts have been made. The department is prepared to beam the presentation on the screens, but we cannot connect. So we will use our hard copies. Is there any member who may not have a hard copy? We all have. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Minister, for giving me this opportunity to speak to members. I'm not alone here. I'm with the administration of EDD, headed by the DG, Mr. Malcolm Simpson, next to me. And then I've got Len and Tanya. They are all part of the team as well, with here and other officials that are coming from the ministry here. In the presentation of our APP, I think we're not going to say anything very so much new, because we are going to talk about things that are supposed to do with our economy, and the context of which you said in 2009, and redefined in also in 2014. What we'll be focusing on will be the kind of improvement that we have done and the kind of things that we think we should be chasing in this particular financial year. So in the first part of our presentation, you'll see we speak just to the role as we have always been defining it, that we chase jobs, we identify priorities of jobs, inclusive growth and industrialization. That is our main focus. So across ourselves within government and within the private sector, we look around and say, where are these things? Where can we get jobs? Where is it that we can chase inclusive growth? Who is doing something that will allow us to industrialize? So that's one role that we focus on. The other one, we then support alignment of state around implementation, and we just check around ourselves as a state as to whether we're aligned in terms of things that we need to do. Then we oversee the and provide strategic direction of the IDC, of the finance institution, development finance institution, the IDC in particular, and then provide strategic direction for the competition policy and the trade administrative matters. The context within which we present this APP today is in an environment where we observe modest global growth rates and the policy environment that is so much uncertain and economic nationalism taking up here in that country says, focusing very much inwardly and looking at protecting what is theirs to serve their own interests, which actually influence the way we are supposed to posture also as a country. The African growth rates have been slowed down, and we are aware, all of us, that Nigeria faces faced with a recession, and Angola growth rates falling sharply, and Egypt is subject to IMF if we were to focus on the major economic players in the continent. So the slower continental growth is beginning to impact on the South African exports of our manufactured goods to its fastest growing market. So the domestic growth was low during the past year, and it was estimated at 0.3. And we are projecting it to be around 1.3 in 2017, which is something that we need to pay attention to say that if we're at 0.3, what is it that we really have to do dramatically to be able to get to the new estimate in 2017? The domestic, the South Africa experienced the biggest drought in generations, which impacted in the agricultural output. I think as we speak to the other figures, you'll begin to see how negatively has this affected us. So currently, we are standing at 6.1 million employment in South Africa, which is actually showing that we have increased by 2.4 since our previous lowdown. And looking at that, spreading is with around provinces. The next slide indicate to us how has that actually been spread around the various provinces. We have our provinces outlined in 2016 how we have actually performed in column one. You can look at that. But when you look at that, you can see that Limpopo, Eastern Cape, KZN saw the largest percentage increase in jobs in 2016. So those three. And when we're looking behind as a comparison to say between 2008 and now, who were the players then? It's interesting that Limpopo still stays. If you take it from 2008 up to 2016, Limpopo is in that position where there's been the largest percentage of increase. But you begin to see Eastern Cape and KZN coming in the place of Gauteng and Western Cape. It's a very interesting picture to observe. But one of the things that when you look at that table, we should observe is Free State, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Northwest, where we see that there's been a drop in employment. And when you look at those provinces, most of them, the main triangle, and most of them are like dependent also on agriculture. And you see the kind of like patterns. And they are the ones that are vulnerable to the losses if you look at your account. When looking at the side of unemployment changes, if you look at them, in the next table, we find that KZN, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape saw the largest percentage increase in total employment. If you look at that table, you'll actually see it. Our employment at the current moment is accounting for 5.8 in the country. So that spread that you see there is the one that is showing you how it's distributed. And in the last column, it's showing you the percentage, in the middle column, it's showing you how the unemployment has actually increased in the various provinces. The next slide just shows is an expression of how our jobs are distributed in a pie chart form. It was something that was interesting that we were debating with the team, and we're looking at, when you look at this, what do we see? When you look at this, Gauteng account for the largest number of jobs that it is carrying, and it's followed by the Western Cape by KZN and then Western Cape. Something that we're playing around for, in this discussion, was asking ourselves, there is this call for a change. And I'm saying that something must do something differently. There must be a radical economic transformation. What are you talking about? What is it that we're drawing it from? And we started like drawing some parallels between what were the provinces in 1994 and between 1994 up to now. What is it that you might be seeing? Is there a change in terms of patterns of the way the distribution of jobs is actually shown? And it was interesting to see that the Transvaal, when you put it together, was giving you the largest percentage at 55.8, and you then have it followed by the Western Cape at 25.7. I mean the Cape Colony at 25.7, and then the Natal Colony was giving us 15.8, and the last one was Free State, which was giving us 4.7. So when you look at that kind of an arrangement, and you ask yourself, what is it that were the economic strategies at the time and now, and you ask yourself, has there been change? We all agree that this pattern has always been there, except for the Free State that has actually lost a lot because of the loss in the mineral complex, in the mineral complex. But the rest, you can actually see that it is anchored in our economy. The way it is presenting itself is within the old structural arrangement. So if you want to address the situation now, it's important that when you talk about this transformation, although you are looking at your ownership transformation, the structural transformation of the economy is very important in order for you to get out of the challenges that we're actually seeing today. If you don't do so, you are going to perpetuate the pattern, and you are going to keep on arguing, why are we at 25% unemployment? Because your base is not actually giving you what you're supposed to do. And hence, that's why if you listen to the minister in the debate, emphasizing the need of addressing these changes structurally and systematically, even when we know that they, and was actually saying that if you want to address meaningful ownership, address the structural impediments of your economy, so that when you address the ownership as well, it must be meaningful. You mustn't own something that is actually defunct. You must own something that is actually meaningful. So that pattern is actually, was assisting to do, to us to be able to see that. So when you look also on the next, slide, which is speaking to unemployment, how has it spread? There's quite an interesting picture that when you look at the spread of unemployment and the way, and also in the on the employment side, the pattern is the same. It gives us the same pattern of the provinces which are leading, are the same ones with those that are actually leading on the other side. We say to us that it's not necessarily the changes, the performance of various specific provinces that are actually giving you something. Really, your economy is actually constrained, and there are no changes in structural arrangement in the various provinces, except that you can be able to see that there's a bit of impact when you look at the Northern Cape, because it shows that there's certain input that you've actually made that makes it to change into to be something else, and then you see drastic changes in those areas. So we expect you have had that. So those are the things that we are looking at to say, where do we want to go to when we put in a performance plan for the coming years. So the next slides then speak to the actual APPs responding to the issues that I've actually raised now. Is the ones that I was raising to say, in this year, there are certain areas where we thought there should be some improvement. So the role of our strategic plan in this case lays the it lays out the department's key objective. The APP, and that is a 1 point, is a 1 year implementation plan, and it set the target. So in the implementation of our APP in this year, we want to prioritize smart use of resources to attain maximum value. Somebody asked the minister, a journalist asked the minister, and members of the NA asked the minister, they actually recommended, should we not increase the money? And the minister says it's not actually in the increase of the money. It's actually in the smart way of working with the little that you have in order to achieve more. It might not you might not necessarily need money, but to identify where the opportunities lie that can lead you to achieve even more. We are looking at enhancing coordination within the state, and also and work in partnership. And the improved partnership with business and labor, and we are looking at a strong focus on the inclusive growth goals through the radical economic transformation, as I've mentioned earlier, on measures which include the work set out in the in our KPIs. The next one, slide speak to the overview of the annual performance. It speaks to the kind of improvement that we've made in this year. Remember last year, the AG raised issues around, even say there were certain things that were not stipulated in a manner that can be measured. He kind of said some of them sounded a little bit vague for someone who is not in the field. So we do a number of improvements that we have done in order to respond to that. So in this you'll hear words like action minutes. You'll hear us identifying things like the structure of it as compared to the previous year. We also include in each and every objective the definition of what is it that you should expect out of us. So it's not a broad strategy. We say, when we say this is what you must expect. It must have the following, this animal must have the following spots. So you see it as we present it. So we are going to be presenting in this APP three programs with six strategic objectives, 23 KPIs, and 180 outcomes that we should deliver to the members each quarter. By the end of the year, and they are distributed in different quarter. In the next slide, we're just pointing out, just reminding ourselves that whatever we're doing is coming out of the 14 outcomes of government, and our focus is on decent employment, skilled and capable workforce, and an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network, vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities, and contributing to our society. So in the 14, we are focusing more ourselves on that. And we're not saying that when we focus on that, the others are not related. They keep on getting related. That's why the issue that we raise around alignment become very critical, because you can't be promoting an economy in an unsafe environment. You can't be promoting an economy where the population is unhealthy, and the quality of education. So there is so our major focus is on these ones, but we keep on integrating the other activities as we interact with other members. The next one is just pointing out on the fact that we focus more on our growth path and the areas of our growth path, of which have been consolidated in the 9-point plan. So there mustn't be a confusion there when you talk about areas of the growth path. The 9-point plan says these are the areas that were weak in the past as we're implementing. And the president says, can we focus on this so that we can sharpen this growth path that we are having? So now, coming into the next part of our presentation, when you enter straight into the the programs. You have already spoken to the fact that we have got three programs and six strategic objectives, 23 KPI and 1-8. That is presenting just a summary of where they are located. You can see that ourselves in administration are very narrow. We've got only like two. And the reason why we do that, we've got a small department and a small department in size. And also the fact that we've already addressed a lot of different stuff. We're focusing now on how to improve accountability and also how to improve our financial performance. So those two are actually lying on that. The majority of our work, when we look at it, it will be on your strategic objective two up to six. And if you observe them very well, you can actually see that the bulk of it, the largest bulk, is in infrastructure. The reason why it's on our infrastructure is because, remember that we have adopted out of the 10 areas of our growth path, the major one that we said will trigger most of the path that we must do is, we said we should be focusing on infrastructure as an economic catalyst in our economy of South Africa. And then you can see that the next one that are coming, the next bigger one is your investment, and then it goes into your growth path. So there is a pattern that is showing the kind of prioritization that we're actually having, the amount of work that we should be doing in the various areas. So going into the strategic objective one, which has got two KPIs, we focus on the audit of the Auditor General's opinion, which we are saying that we want to systematically continue to address concerns and weaknesses identified in the preceding year, with an intention to maintain our unqualified audit of an opinion. So that's what we'll be focusing on. That's the objective that will be happening in our administration. The next one, the second one that we'll be dealing with is on that one, the expectation is that by quarter three, we should be able to present to the committees a report on how we are actually performing in that particular area. Then the next one, which is KPI 2, another strategic or objective, is on what we call governance and accountability and management and performance assessment tool. DPME, the Department of the Department of of monitoring and evaluation has a set of things that measures how we should perform our work, and it gives us an assessment back to be able to say these are the areas where we are weak. So in our focus on that, we want that whatever they have given us in the previous year, we want to improve on it. So in the current year, we want to look at ensuring that we systematically address the scores, all the areas that are lower in target, are lower than the target identified in the preceding year. So we want to increase all those and pay attention to that. And that's what we'll be bringing in all the time when we look at our administration. Going to strategic objective two, which has got to do with the coordination of job drivers. We have got three KPIs there. And in these three KPIs, we want to deliver analytical reports and public policy on socioeconomic development and the NGP. And we want to look at the NGP job drivers and coordination of structures. And then the third one, we want to look at the support provided to provinces. So on the first one, the KPI 3 on the analytical and public policy advocacy reports on socioeconomic development, we want the committee to expect 4 reports that will be presenting this year. So each quarter at least give 1. And this report will contain the following things. We want to take forward the following work in the following area. Research and policy on policy areas of the NGP. So we'll pick up an area and do some analysis on it, research on it, and suggest improvements that must be done by the state and partners, and present that at a particular point. So the other one that we will expect as a report is advocacy efforts, work that is done by the ministry, departmental agency through interaction with companies and business forums and chamber of industry. So interaction with various, in our interaction with our partners, we identify issues that we can work with them, and then work out a program with them that is assisting us to improve a situation that will create more jobs. So a report like that will actually be given, and then a report also on crisis of administered goods. So we'll take pricing like electricity, what sort of impact that it is having in the economy, and look at it, and how is it, what impact is it having, does it give us a positive impact or a negative impact, and then we bring them as a bring that report to the attention of, say, cabinet and all stakeholders to see what is it that we can actually adjust to make it more effective. On KPI, yes, we said we're going to give you 4 reports, 1 each quarter. So on KPI 4, on a number of reports on NGP job drivers and coordinating structures, there we have got 10 job drivers in our growth path. We want to take 2 of them, and then what we'll do on them is that we'll do on them and do some work on them. And what is it that we'll be doing? The ministry and the department and the agency may undertake to promote specific identified areas. For instance, we can take green energy, and then you go into it and promote it like we did in the Northern Cape, and then we start like following up on them. We might be taking maybe issues around beneficiation, look at it and then promote, and then present improvement that we think that must actually happen. So we should be expecting some reports around it. So it includes also engaging of the sector stakeholders and supporting work of the regulators and DFIs in the job drivers. So in other words, when you identify, say, you want to talk about the issues around beneficiation and all other aspects that are actually involved in there, you check as to whether the regulation is actually okay. How is it influenced in terms of trade that is coming from outside? Is it not impacting on it? The competition in there, are you clear around there? Are there no influences that are actually closing barriers? In terms of financing, are people financed in order for them to be able to get? So you look at the patterns of how DFIs are actually financing that. So when we have done so, you come up with action plans to be actually to carry out it. So in that area, we're looking at presenting 4 reports, even in them, 1 in the second quarter, 1 in the third quarter, and 2 in the last quarter. The next area is number of reports on support provided to provinces. We have indicated that we are assisting provinces to meet their targets, and in the last interaction, we have indicated that we have been working with provinces to align, they have completely aligned. Now our major focus is on whether they are able to meet the targets that they have actually identified in those areas. So we look at the work that we'll be doing to support them is whether they are aligned, and also hosting meetings with provincial officials and forums with communities also to listen to them, and roadshows with public agencies, and also interact with business at the, that level. We are looking at bringing in 10 reports on that. One report in the first quarter, another one in the third quarter, and the last one, we are looking at 8 reports in different areas. So, in selected provinces, we might be taking different kind of sectors or different growth areas that we want to speak to these areas. It might be that we give like 8 in the 8 provinces, but currently what we're looking at is that we want to limit ourselves, zoom into, let's say, 3 provinces, which is your Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Limpopo, and try to push them hard to have a holistic work around that. And then you also look at then the sectors in the various other provinces where we can actually push them in the meantime. So that's what we're looking at there. On strategic objective 3, which is to facilitate social dialogue and implement social accords, we'll be focusing on the, there are 3 KPIs for this objective, and it's green economy and jobs, and then employment and entrepreneurship for black women and youth, and then social dialogue intervention to save and create jobs, and report on the implementation. So the green economy and the employment and entrepreneurship for black and women and youth, remember that you've got a social accord on this one. So we'll be monitoring them and ensuring that and check on their implementation in progress and areas of improvement, things that we do. We'll be this year we'll also be submitting a report on the youth employment to cabinet, and suggest alternative ways that we can work with, given that we are now also having a working group, the presidential working group on youth, that is coordinating various activities from various all social activities that has got to do with the socio-economic activities that has got to do with the youth. And the third one speaks just to the general social the social dialogues with the different stakeholders in various areas and all the other areas that include your network, and also include the interactions that you normally work with labor. So out of that, what we are looking at is that we want to present to, we want to submit to the committee 2 reports. One in the second quarter, and the next one in the fourth quarter. And all of them will be speaking to these various areas that we have spoken to. The coalition of information on implementation of specific commitment, highlighting specific intervention by government to give effect to the Green Economy Accord, collation of data on green economy, formulation of specific policies and policies. So those are that's what we'll be doing. So we're defining what the kind of reports will be having. On the KPI 6 of that strategic objective, the number of reports on black women and youth in access of employment. So on that one, on that KPI, we want to give 3 reports on it, and I've already spoken. One of them will be the one on youth, and it will be talking to action taken by EDD at the request of EDD by the public or private agency with support black women and entrepreneurship as a critical broad-based development. And we are going to look at also progress report containing detailed information action taken by the state and social partners to give effect to the youth employment and then the cabinet memorandum. So all those in all those will be reporting in the last three quarters. They will be giving one report on each of how far have we gone and what are the things that actually came out of it. On KPI 8, on the number of reports on social dialogue interventions to save and create jobs, we are saying that EDD will contribute through meeting and workshop with social partners. The intervention may result, say, in agreements, MOUs, and minutes in the workplace, and report on implementation of one or more of the social accord. So these are the areas of focus. So when we report, and then we'll be giving two reports in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, we'll be speaking to the quality of the report, whether it is responding to the issues that you want to have, is defined in that, is the one that is actually defined in that block. So if we don't meet that, it will be saying something else that we didn't agree with the committee. Then we go to strategic objective 4. Now, strategic 4 is on the coordination of infrastructure. We have got 6 KPIs, and members will remember that I said this is the it has got the largest action. We've got the largest action product to be actionated, which are like 114. But some of them is just compliance in terms of what is it that we must do. Some of them has got to do with the quality of it. So in this one, in this objective 4, we will be giving quarterly cabinet level a progress report on infrastructure. And then we'll be evaluating our infrastructure project, also work on the unblocking and fast-tracking and facilitation of the infrastructure. The report will also be saying how many times have we met and what is it that we facilitated. We're speaking to the coordination to drive implementation on SIP 5 because the minister is the chair of that SIP. It will also be speaking to initiatives to increase localization in the infrastructure and industrialization program. So all those reports that we'll be giving will be on that. So to break them into the 6 pieces, we have got KPI 9, that will be speaking to the cabinet reports, and those cabinet reports in each quarter, we are giving around 64 reports that entails completion of reports for at least 16 of the 18 SIPs. So we are going to give 64 reports in a year. And each quarter I'll be giving 16, just to cabinet to indicate where they are. We have to meet that. The next KPI speak to the number of infrastructure projects we have unblocked, we have evaluated, and we have fast-tracked and facilitated. So on that one, we'll be giving each, we call it an action minute. Because in that one, if we are going to report, we can't just be reporting that there are so many that we have done. We speak about what is it that we're actually dealing with in each and every area. The next area in that KPI, again, is the number of cabinet and PICC strategic decisions. Normally, when you present to cabinet each quarter, there are actions that they expect us to do. So those action plans, we are going to be taking them up. So we have got 4 units because we go to cabinet 4 times. So it means report to say how far have we actually done that in there. So in KPI 12 is a number of PICC meetings that are facilitated and held. So there are these meetings that have, according to the Act, is supposed to be held. We make sure that they happen. So we've got secretariat meeting, we've got management meetings, we've got PIC meeting, PIC council meeting. So if you look at those quarters, that say seven reports on quarter one, eight reports on quarter two, 7 reports on quarter three, 8 reports, is actually showing the routine meetings actually like 7. The 8 is those areas where we've got council meetings because we normally have it in every 6 months. So that's why we have got 2 8. So in KPI 13, it's coordination of coordination actions to drive implementation of CIP 5. That's the one that I was saying. This one is chaired by the minister, and he has to make sure that they it happens, coordinate all players to be able to meet that. So in this one, we are going to be giving a report each quarter. We have got to produce a report each quarter on how that has been done. And the activities include interaction with the stakeholders that are involved in that SIP. It also includes also individual meetings, public meetings to promote that SIP. The last one is on the number on the initiative to increase localization in the infrastructure. So this one is when we did, if you look at the various projects of the infrastructure, they will be speaking to how many women are there, how many local companies are there, what are these, who are subcontracted to do 1, 2, 3. So this is the area where we actually evaluate the impact of a project. So in that one, what we will do is we'll be reporting on a specific initiative to intervene in a sector. Sometimes we find that one sector doesn't address certain things, so we implement it. Sometimes the youth target is never met properly, and we come in. So we'll then be giving those 3 reports that speak to there's 4 reports that are speaking to that. One in quarter 2 and 3, quarter 3, another one, and then 2 in quarter 4. On strategic objective 5, which is to promote productive investment, industrial financing, and entrepreneurship for jobs and inclusive growth, we have got 5 KPIs that are responding to that. We'll be looking at investment initiative facilitated or fast track or unblocked. There will be a specific report on that. The funding allocation for the township and some prizes, because that's a priority that the sector should actually be looking at. The level of impact on industrial finance by DFIs and the department. Oversight of engagement with the IDC and economic development opportunities identified through infrastructure. So in this one, what should be expected is that we are going to be giving around 14 action minutes feedback to the committee, starting from quarter one being 2, quarter 3, and then quarter 4 being 3, and then the last one being 6. and what is it that will be contained in the report, those reports. Those reports should be speaking to the promotion of higher levels of investment and focusing on steps to facilitate, fast-track, and block obstacles on new and existing investment. And these, in most cases, will be supporting the efforts of the one-stop services, the one-stop shop services, Invest SA. So we'll be looking at unblocking things like access to electricity, water licenses, and land, regulatory approval, funding, and technical support. So we'll be reporting on what is it that EDD have done in order to get that. And it is important that this is very important because sometimes we hear DTI reporting or another department reporting, and then we hear people say, it sounds like you're making a reputation. It's actually not a reputation because our focus is we are interested in jobs, we're interested in the investment, we're interested in growth. So if there is a particular area that has been identified as work that we must look at, like investors, ours is to follow up as to whether the things that you want to see and the targets that you have set are actually coming in. So that's when you come in and poof, to get it done. It may be reported in another department, but we will be indicating what the kind of work that we've actually done there also. So the KPI 15 that relates to that strategy is the number of investment initiatives facilitated and fast-tracked and unblocked, those specific ones. That are. So those ones come normally from people reporting and say, I'm stuck and I've got this idea, I don't have financing, or that municipality doesn't give me land. So we normally go in and like facilitate and get it done, or a particular province and go and sell the idea to get, say, the investor to say, this will be good for your province. You think we should actually take it. So those are the kind of ones. And we're saying to, we are saying these are the things that will be given to the committee, those reports that you've actually indicated there. The number of reports produced on funding allocation for township enterprises, on that one, we're saying that we'll be giving three reports, and they will be in the last three quarters of the year. The number of reports on the level of impact on industrial finance and DFIs, as we have indicated, we'll be monitoring and analyzing the level and impact of financing, establishing targets for identified jobs, job drivers, and measurable improvements in funding. And it will include the impact on employment, employment and companies assisted, and development goals and inclusive growth. So all those in those ones in the IDC related, in the DFI, in the development finance related work as identified, we'll be giving one report, four reports, and one in each quarter, just to indicate what is it, what has been financed, what is the impact of that finance, is it assisting us to go forward, are there changes that were proposed to the finance institution. 18 is the number of ministers. Under 18, ministers interact with the IDC all the time to check on their progress, to check as to whether they are in their corporate plan, they are actually online. At the same time, come in with the lessons that we have learned as we interact with provinces and the department and other stakeholders, issues that have been raised that need to be exchanged with IDC, which are of the strategic nature. So minister interact with IDC all the time. So in that interaction, there are certain interventions that we make that need to get reported as part of the improvement of our implementation of our work. So we are looking at that. We'll be giving a report. In each quarter when we do a report, we'll be touching on that, on what is it that we have done, what are the changes, what are the suggested changes that we, or improvement that they, within the DFI should be looking at. On KPI 19, speak to the number of economic development opportunities identified through infrastructure projects. So in the implementation of the infrastructure, it's not only, we're not only just focusing on it and seeing if things have happened. We just look at things that will be able to assist us to create jobs. So in this one, EDD work may cover the following issues. New economic opportunities facilitated by the department, or a report showing how local business benefit from infrastructure, and also promotion of offtake of agreement by business for planned infrastructure, and also partnership involving the private sector and DFI. So the kind of report that we'll be presenting will actually be covering that. And it's one report only, and we'll do it at the end of the year. And the reason why we do that is because in the middle of the year, there are various activities that we'll do right in the infrastructure. So this is an overall evaluation of things that need to be done at the end of the year. On the strategic objective 6, it speaks to promotion of competition, trade, and economic regulation in support of job creation, industrialization, and economic inclusion. For KPIs, we'll be looking at strengthening of economic regulators across the state, initiate measures and acquisition, market inquiries and abuse of dominance, ensuring trade authorities and policies support industrialization and employment, oversight engagement with trade and competition. There's always, there's often a comment that says that are we not focusing on punishing the industry? And in that way, are we not retarding investment? We just want to indicate that these things are actually done to promote entry, free entry of competitive ideas. We focus on this because if there's abuse of dominance, there will be blockages of new entrants, and we'll be having the same kind of economic activities depending in an area. So it's intended to do that. It doesn't have to do with any other thing. So on those ones, on those four, the first one, on the number of strategic initiatives and to enhance capacity and performance and outcomes of economic regulators, we'll be presenting two reports in quarter two and quarter three. And those reports should be speaking to the support that would have rendered in the economic regulators, which relate to areas like technical policy workshops on the capacity, facilitating of study visits to other institutions to identify best practices, changes in legislations and regulations, production of technical documents and guidelines to institutions, engagement on capacity building of at the ministerial and senior department level. So those reports will be speaking to work that relates to that. The next one on the number of reports, on initiative on measures, acquisitions, and market inquiries and abuse. We've got four reports, one third quarter, three in the fourth quarter, and this report will be speaking to the work that we would have done, that is participation in major proceedings in the Competition Commission and Competition Appeals Court, negotiating public interest conditions in the measures. Producing reports on compliance with conditions and measures, intervention to address cartels and legislation amendments and participating in the market inquiry. So those reports will be showing where each of these actually happened. And we didn't locate them in quarters, but in all of them, this is what in the complete the report will be covering that must be expected out of this committee. On KPI 21, the number of reports initiative on measures and acquisition, market inquiries, and abuse of dominance, while looking at four of those, and that would be speaking to these areas that we have actually outlined. On KPI 22, is number of initiatives to ensure trade authorities and policy support industrialization, mostly on ITAT activities. So we'll be giving two reports, one in quarter two and one in quarter four, and those reports will be talking to the trade directive issues issued in terms of legislation. So, and then the ITEC reviews of tariffs, and we can be looking at regulations related to trade policy administration, formulation of amendments of the ITA Act, assessment reports on tariffs and rebates, and assessment reports on trade and remedies, and impact on assessment of trade policies and analytical reports. So we'll be giving two on that. We'll be giving two action minutes in relation to what we've done in those particular areas. One in quarter two and one in quarter four. KPI 23, number of ministerial and departmental oversight engagement with trade and competition authorities. We'll be giving a report in each quarter, and two in the last quarter. And we'll be looking at that will be giving us reports on approval of their APPs, annual reports, budgets, and organograms, whether we did that, and evaluation of performance of the entities, integration of government policy, and monitoring of regulation. So if you look at all the APP that we have now as an area of improvement, is that it says what is it that must be expected of the department by oversight bodies, whether presidency or the portfolio committee or the select committee. These are the areas and these are the reports that we'll be giving. But the improvement that you have seen here is that it defines the area so that we can be able to measure as to whether we're in the we're going to what they we're really doing what we're supposed to be doing. So the last slide just speak to the budget of the department that as outlined 80.6 or 0.7 million being the for administration, 35.6 being for growth path and social dialogue, and 680 being for total for investment competition. So those are the things that we wanted to share with the committee. This is what we are intending to do in this year, and we hope that if we do this will assist us to really start rocking the economy into the right direction and bring the necessary changes.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for the presentation. Minister, are we through with that? Honourable members, there we have it. Let me kick off with just one concern or question. I think it's more a question than a concern. And then give opportunity to the members to raise questions or comments as we engage with the report.
Mine is just that one notes that there is a lot of reports that you are referring to. Now, in the APP, you've not indicated to us what the strength of your administration is. And the concern of the committee might be, would you have the capacity to be able to do that work? Because I notice also, Deputy Minister, that you say finances is not a concern. Now, in the scheme of things, 680 million is not a lot of money. And that's not your total budget, that's only Program 3. The total budget that would be allocated to you is not a lot of money. But we notice then as well that if my maths serve me properly, it's more than 70% of your budget that is allocated to Program 3, which is for investment, competition and trade. Now, repeating the question, can you give us the certainty that there is enough capacity within the department to be able to produce all these reports? I won't question the quality thereof, because I've seen the quality of reports that you've done in the past, but would rather want to say, would you be able to maintain that quality with the allocation that is being made to you? The Honourable Tikhale is the first hand, then the Honourable Makhwebu, and then we'll have the Honourable Faba. Let's have those three first members. Can I ask that we limit ourselves to three questions? Honourable Tikhale.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have one question. Let me take this opportunity and thank the Deputy Minister for the presentation of the APP. My question comes from where they are presenting about the provincial jobs and unemployment, and the last one, you spoke to the departmental budget. I just want to know, Chairperson, because looking at our provinces compared to Gauteng, they are not really doing well. Just want to know from the minister that how are they going to utilize all these programs that they presented to us today in order to uplift the lives of the people in the provinces, especially Limpopo province. Thanks.
I should have said you from Limpopo. The Honourable Mahwebu from Eastern Cape.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Minister, Deputy Minister, and team from the department. On the Eastern Cape, you've mentioned that there's been a growth on jobs, 2.9. Now my question is, what's the nature of these jobs? Are we talking permanent jobs, or what some people call jobs, which I disagree always, the expanded public works program, because to me it's just a program, government program, to alleviate poverty, so it can't be called jobs. Are we talking seasonal jobs? What kind of jobs, are we talking here in the growth of jobs in the Eastern Cape, the 2.9? That's the first question. The second question is around the issue, in your APP you've talked about the 9-point plan that is revitalizing agriculture and the agro-processing. And also you've mentioned in your presentation that South Africa has experienced the biggest drought in generations, which impacted on agricultural output. Now, from the Eastern Cape back home, in April, I think end of April, we woke up to some sad news that there's a looming disaster in the citrus industry, where 40% of the produce was that is oranges in this instance were falling from the trees, and one did not mention that this is an industry in the Eastern Cape that is a serious contributor to the GDP, but above that it threatens jobs, seasonal jobs. And my question, therefore, is what is the department doing or involvement to put interventions and assist this industry, directly or indirectly? That's my second question. And then lastly, my last question will be, can the minister or the deputy minister also, in this instance, explain to us the concept or this policy directive, the radical economic transformation, as you know, received or as understood by government, and how it relates to the national growth plan, as well as to your national, to your national infrastructure plan, and also to your national growth plan. These are the three questions, Chairperson. I might have more. It's very interesting.
Thank you. If we have time, we'll come back for another round. But let's have the Honourable Father from the Northern Cape.
Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister. As I see, there's a lot of KPIs and a lot of reports that has been spoken to. I'm going to actually speak on things of last year to now, and one of the things was that we reached 16 million jobs and we were crossing 4 trillion rand last year, or 2015. I want to know what the situation is at this stage on the jobs. Did that increase or actually decrease as promises were made on the amount of jobs? Then on the other one was on the credit ratings. How long does it usually take, or what is your suggestion, what it will take for us to get out of this credit rating, how long this could perhaps take us as a country? Then as I represent the Northern Cape on my third question, I'm going to make it quite short, Minister. On the Saldanha Northern Cape Development Corridor, I know you've been talking about this since 2012. I would like to know, where are we at this stage? I know steel has taken a dump worldwide with mining, but we need to understand that for the Northern Cape to really grow with jobs, I was listening at jobs, and I can tell you I know the reason why the Northern Cape did have a growth in jobs is obviously because of the sun energy and those type of initiatives that we really are, it's helpful, and we really appreciate government's help as well as all the other private sectors that came in the Northern Cape to help. But we need to create something in the Northern Cape on the western part of our country, and I do believe that this corridor, as well as the gas reserves and a deep sea harbour on the west coast, could benefit the whole country tremendously. Obviously, with road and rail network contacting the Gauteng province area to the west coast. And if you can perhaps give me information on how far are we with this, or are we financially constrained that we can't go at this stage? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Father, just on your second question, can I just clarify, when you ask about the credit ratings, you're particularly asking how far before we get out of the downgrade, because the ratings will continue all the time.
There's different ratings of different agencies, obviously, depending
right.
on what, but I would like to have the Minister's expertise on that, what he would suggest, how far it can still go down and the turnaround strategy.
Okay, there's a clarification. Minister, what we now do is to allow you, Deputy Minister, and then your team to take on any one of the questions. Be as concise as you can, because we want to give other members an opportunity to come in with their questions as well. In your hands. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Honourable Members for those questions. I'm going to ask Deputy Minister to have a first crack, and then I would respond to the questions that remain. Deputy Minister, with the Chairperson's permission, over to you.
Thanks, Ed. The capacity of the department. You will never, in an institution of government, have maximum capacity, because if we were to do that, we would then have to take the whole budget of government do what they're supposed to do. But through innovation, you can actually be able to address that, and have been doing that. So what we do is we've got capacity of coordinating persons in the department. We have a specialist on that. But this economy will then work We have got MOUs, say, with institutions of higher learning and research institutions. So when they work together like that, they produce something that is more credible. Unlike something that we'll be dealing with in a court. We also look at not only that, I mean, even private institutions that might make an impact on this. For instance, we're currently working on youth entrepreneurship. We just realized that there are a number of mentorship institutions that are actually doing it better than what we would have built in a department. So that's how we work in order to mitigate that. On the provincial contributions, we must say that if you look at Limpopo, it's actually doing very well in terms of its growth over the years, and also in terms of employment creation. What we need to do is the issue that I was talking about on structural reform of our economy, to be able to come up with new other ways of actually that can actually change the development. For instance, in the Limpopo, all along we've been talking about beneficiation. The economic zone in the Limpopo will be focusing on issues around beneficiation of minerals, which was not there before. So it's part of changing the structure, which also answers the question, what is this thing that we call radical economic transformation? It says there's something wrong with our economy as it was structured before. There are certain changes that we must do. And if we don't do them, we are going to land in a crisis. So either we're going to have instability, or we're going to be stuck in this growth trend. And what is it that is addressing that? Is that this thing that we're talking about, as a change the structure, look at the things that we're supposed to do. Don't allow yourself to be a dependent economy, economy that is dependent on your commodities. Do something about your commodity so that the value must go up. And if you don't do so, you remain as you are, and you're actually going to go down, because the things that you're actually sending outside, they're depleting. So you need to look at changing all that structure to be something else, and then you put in agro-processing and beneficiation at a higher level of your work. Again, change your systems, because your systems might be wrong. You might be finding you use old technology, and this technology is taking long and makes you uncompetitive with others. So part of your ways that you must do is to change that. And you don't change it gradually. You need to move fast, because you are actually sinking in a faster rate. So that's what makes it more radical. Make it more radical. Bring more radical changes in your economy. So the other one that you must look at now is that your participation in the economy, what does it give? If it doesn't address your demographics, it means the issue that you are addressing here of stabilizing the workplace, you won't have it. Because people are going to respond in a different manner, because your demographics are not addressed properly. So address that, because it assists you to stabilize. And addressing that is not just about putting in people. It means you must structure your education in such a way that it responds to this. You must structure your settlement in such a way that it's closer to work. You must structure your settlement so that people live healthy there. There are health facilities so that you don't have a sick, workforce in it. So these are the radical things. I mean, radical. This is what makes it more radical, because you must do it with speed, so that you don't measure 100 years. You must have changes that must happen now as quick as possible, so that it addresses people have hope. Because what makes stability of a country and growth is hope. So you must address them. So. The The one on what we do when, because of the, I mean, the Eastern Cape citrus, we didn't actually address, there's been an interaction between the department and ourselves with the Eastern Cape, looking at the various things that might actually, that need to be done there, including how do we respond to drought, how do we respond to negative things like this. And we don't have a final product in terms of what it is. And that's why Eastern Cape is part of our focus. The other thing that I must say is that within the Eastern Cape itself, I just came back from, that's where the citrus is, the Fort Beaufort, to go and listen to the impact of that activity. And people were saying to us, what are the things that are an impact? And what was interesting is that the people in Fort Beaufort, they were not talking about the challenges in the citrus. They were also talking about the alternatives in tourism and alternatives in another area that can actually comfort, because they did raise that dependency on the citrus only. It's quite dangerous. We need to look at other alternatives that can alleviate that. They did give us those leads that we must actually look at. Minister, I think that
Well, Chairperson Thuyo, thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for those. I'll make a few remarks on the questions that remain, and perhaps just return to one issue, Chairperson, that you've asked, that I think was important to clarify further for the committee. So on the issue, let me start, Chairperson, with your issue on the report. I think Deputy Minister dealt with the issues of quality and so on. I want to come to one issue. What are these reports about? Because really, in a sense, we're not going to get the kind of impact in the economy by the production of reports. But those reports are the auditable product of the work that the department does. Example, if we do a major unblocking of an infrastructure project, or there's a foreign investor who wants to come in, or a domestic investor, and they can't get a water use license, or they can't get land zoned appropriately, when we unblock that, we set it out in a proper action minute or report. So that's the auditable product. But more important than the product and how well it's written, I'm not looking upset to the department. I don't want 200-300 page documents with a million graphs and beautiful pictures and so on. I want short, action-oriented reports that will show the practical work and the impact on the lives of people. So these are not going to be your glossy reports. These are very much the evidence of the work we're doing. On the question raised by Honorable Dikhali, I think Deputy Minister again replied to the question in detail. I would add one little thing to it. There's a key set of infrastructure projects. Remember, Limpopo's development has been driven very strongly by what has happened at Medupi. Medupi has been an engine of growth in the province. But as Medupi begins to slow down, as each of the units come onto stream, we've got to look at the next stream of infrastructure projects. And the big water pipeline to Lephalale, which we call MGWAP, Mokolo Crocodile Water Augmentation Program, is going to be not only a little bit of jobs through the laying of this massive pipeline, but more importantly, it will provide a secure supply of water to Lephalale. And our sense is that the area with perhaps the biggest growth potential is Lephalale, but we've got to seize it. It's got the potential to be a major, a quite significant city if we develop it properly. Honorable Makhwebu, the DM has raised the citrus issue and the radical economic transformation. Let me illustrate it, because we'll deal with this issue a little bit more, and the perhaps some of the issues around the credit rating a little bit more during the budget vote or the budget debate in the NCOP. But to assist the members of the committee, I'll give an example. Coca-Cola comes to government and says, we want to consolidate three of our bottling plants into one major operation. It will lead to Africa's biggest bottling plant or bottling company. we look at it and we say, okay, we can see the growth for the company and potentially the growth in the economy. But there are a lot of challenges with it. We sat down and we started to fix those challenges. And what came out of it is the best illustration of what we mean by, if you like the term, radical economic transformation. So number one, Appetizer was one of the brands that went into this consolidation. Appetizer had no black South African ownership. As a result of the deal, we said, make sure that at least 20% of Appetizer equity is set aside for black South Africans. But when it comes to who gets it, we made it very clear. We're not looking for politically connected individuals that must be handpicked and brought in. Find people who love making juice. This is going to be their area. This is going to be what they're going to develop and work on over the next number of years. And that's your responsibility as a company. Our only responsibility is to ensure it's a legitimate transaction. So they've announced recently that 20% of equity has now, in fact, been shifted to black South Africans. Secondly, we said you're going to lose jobs. That's the nature of consolidating your operations. So you're going to have to give us a guarantee for at least 3 years that your net employment is going to remain unchanged. They said to us, but this is difficult. We don't know what market conditions will be and so on. But at the end of the day, government prevailed and they agreed to that. Now, for the workers concerned, that's quite a radical step, that they have the security of employment at least for 3 years with the hope that we can take it further. So as we said, you've got to develop small businesses. It's a key part of creating jobs in South Africa. So they've set aside 800 million rand in a fund that will support small businesses. And then finally we said, you've got to make sure that the spaza shops are empowered. At the moment, Coke buys all these big fridges and coolers and display cabinets. And their rule is basically, you can only stock Coke products. As a result of this transaction and quite a tough negotiation, in the end, the agreement that was reached with the company is that at least 10% of Coke-sponsored fridges will be available to competitor products. Now, that makes an enormous difference to a small player, Auntie Cynthia in El Dorado Park, or Jabu Kulu in Alexandra, that they have this freedom and flexibility to stock their fridges. And 117,000 spaza shops are affected by this. So I'm giving those examples because in the discussion, what we're looking for are practical, concrete ways in which we build the strength and resilience of the economy and at the same time ensure that it's an inclusive economy in which all South Africans benefit. On the question that was raised by Honorable Makwebo, I understand and I hear the issue around the jobs thing. We use Statistics South Africa data, which is the data used by everybody, so that there isn't a cherry-picking, because departments have their own data, but it's not been independently tested. Now, the Stats SA data don't break the figures up in the level of detail that's required. So this would be an aggregate of jobs. Some of them may be seasonal, some of them may be part-time, some of them may be temporary, some of them may be full-time. Having said that, I do think that it may be useful in the Select Committee at some stage to have a discussion about the Expanded Public Works Program. Because I want an opportunity to try to persuade the Honorable Makwebo that in fact that program is an incredibly interesting program that is being lauded globally now as a major intervention by government to try to create jobs. It's a ladder for me into permanent jobs. In other words, we mustn't get our people stuck on the ladder. But it's going to be a long-term program. It's not a short-term program because the economy as a whole can't create jobs fast enough for the number of people coming into the labor market every year. And again, at a key moment, we can perhaps look at, I can break that down a little bit. We did a fascinating bit of work looking at 20 years of democracy from the time the Constitution was adopted in 1996 up to the 20th anniversary in 2016. And I'm not going to be able to do it now, Chairperson, but what it showed, just the tagline was that many more South Africans are coming into the labor market than the growth of the population or even the growth of the working age population. So people who previously were essentially stuck in subsistence activities outside of the labor market are coming in, either as workers or as unemployed. That puts enormous pressure on us to create many more jobs. And so I want that opportunity. I know we can't do it in 2-3 minutes, but we shouldn't say EPWPs should be the only job creation. We need more permanent jobs. We need jobs of decent quality. We need jobs with security of employment. We need jobs that are technologically advanced, where people's skills can be utilized. But as a complement to the toolkit, the EPWPs are also quite a useful intervention. On Honorable Faber, the 16 million jobs and 4 trillion rand GDP, neither of these have declined. In fact, it will depend now on what happens in the new data that will come out, and then we'll see whether there is, in fact, a shrinkage of jobs. But the current latest figures show 16.1 million jobs. But I think you raise quite an interesting issue, an important issue, which is the ratings downgrade. How long will it take, and where do we move from here? The where do we move from here is a key part of the speech that I will be making at the NCOP dealing with that matter. So I would want to keep that for that speech. But if we look at, we've done a little bit of work on credit downgrades. And across the world, it differs how soon countries can get back to investment grade. Let me start off by saying my starting point is a ratings downgrade is bad for the economy. It's bad for the poor. It's bad for workers. It's bad for the urban middle class. It's bad. And investors extract a higher return. They say, look, you know, your risk profile has gone up. You're going to have to pay more if we're going to lend you money. And you'll have to give us a better return if we're going to invest our money. So we've got to move to an investment grade again. And it depends on us as a country in part, showing decisiveness and implementing a credible roadmap to get back into investment grade. The elements of that is going to be the subject of the budget policy debate in the NCOP. On the question that's been raised about Saldanha in the Northern Cape, where are we? In our plan one, in our first iteration of the plan, an important part was to significantly increase the iron ore rail and port capacity from Sishen to Saldanha. As we got our plans together, the market demand for iron ore fell through the floor. We now sit with a massive global surplus, as you may have referred to, Honorable Faber, of steel. So there's been a little pickup. Demand has recovered a little bit, but not enough for Transnet to feel confident that it can go into capital markets and go and borrow money that it has to pay back based on current market demand. So what we've done is we've sat down with Transnet and we've looked at what can be done in the development corridor. And there are two things. The one is, even though they are slowing down the massive expansion of rail capability, they are looking at some improvements, infrastructure improvements on the line. And again, perhaps when we come next time, we can give a bit of information on that. And then they've front-loaded a lot of the work. They're putting a little bit more effort and energy in the Saldanha side. And the reason for that is Saldanha can also, in addition to being an iron ore export port, it can also attract the oil and gas industry on the west coast of the country. And so I visited Saldanha a few months ago to look at the infrastructure we're building. One of the keys has been completely revamped to be able to handle new capacity. We want sailors and ships and rigs and so on to be coming and being repaired in Saldanha. At the back of the port, we've agreed to the creation of an industrial development zone that will basically be back-of-port activities, industrial activities that can go into export. And that is fairly far advanced in the work. And again, be happy at some stage to brief the Honourable Member a little bit more on that. The second thing that we've done is we've cleaned up and fast-tracked some of the energy projects on the West Coast. Honourable Members would know about the number of wind farms. So in Matsikama, for example, Eskom has completed the Sere Wind Farm, S-E-R-E, which is a fairly significant contributor to energy stability in the country, and that obviously in the process also helped to create jobs there. And the big project that is not linked in the first place to the port and to energy is the Clan William Dam. So there the cost of building, of significantly raising the wall of the dam is such that we haven't yet got all of those issues resolved, but we committed to raising that wall, increasing the water supply, and unlocking the potential of the West Coast. But I'd end off by saying all of this, while it may be very important and very necessary, doesn't really, not all of this will help the Northern Cape necessarily. So for the Northern Cape, what we need to do is we bring a lot of investment in the Northern Cape at the moment in solar energy. But there's a point at which the number of solar plants will begin to slow down. And at that stage, we've got to have a much better industrialization strategy. So we've tried to look at what components can be built in the Northern Cape. I visited a factory in Upington near to the airport that does these the glass panels that are used in the solar plants. But it's still relatively modest. So I think one needs to find much deeper industrialization projects in the Northern Cape so that when that flush of money that's come from renewable build programs has stabilized, then the Northern Cape has something else going for it. Incidentally, Honourable Chair, one of the issues we've said is that community trusts and so on that have been set up in the Northern Cape around the solar energy programs should use the dividend flow to create jobs in the Northern Cape, to find entrepreneurial activities there. So perhaps during the course of this year, that could be a useful discussion that we could have at the NCOP, in the Select Committee, about what opportunities there are, because this is forward thinking. As the dividend flows begin to come in, the question is, how do you ensure that that money is invested to enhance development in the Northern Cape? Sorry, we've taken a bit of time on these replies, but the questions are all thoughtful questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister and Deputy Minister. I'm beginning to have a problem, because the information that you're sharing is so helpful for us, and I was hoping that we could go on much longer. Mm-hmm. Let's have Honourable Mtimunya, who's from Mpumalanga, and then can I get an indication? Are there any other hands? Mm-hmm. Honourable Ntebe will be the last one, and he's from the Northwest. Honourable Mtimunya.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, are we on junk status as a country? Because my reading of the report is that we're not on junk status, we're just above junk status, non-investment destination. That is my understanding. I know there is a theory that goes on, even in the media, that says we're in junk status. Are we in junk status or not? The also reports of some dishonesty on the part of some rating agencies. What work are we doing as a country at international platform to regulate this kind of a tendency on the part of rating agencies to downgrade a country just on political interests of their own? That is my view. It is only based on political views or interest of on the part of some rating agencies. I think we need to be doing some work at international platforms against this and try to regulate or do something else. The Our target of the 6 million jobs that we want to create in 2030, is it 6 million? Eh? Are we on course? Are we going to achieve that particular goal? Che, the APP, with greatest of respect to me, does not address the necessary radicalism in terms of economic development in the rural areas. Your former homelands, where I come from, remains as poor as they were 30 years ago. I'm not sure, I hear you talking about rural township economy, but the actual rural economy that has been stuck for so many years, and actually, in my view, is actually a ticking time bomb. What are our plans in terms of this program or policy of a radical economic transformation? The, should I say, judgments or verdicts of the Competition Commission, Chair, who monitors the implementation to the latter of such verdicts? If it's you, Honorable Minister, in your department, can you perhaps share with us to what extent do you go? Because I have an issue here with the recent judgment or verdict on the Competition Commission by some collusion in the construction industry. Part of the verdict said that these companies that would have collided or colluded should begin to reinvest in the BEE construction industry and BEE in a true sense. But my view is that some of this investment by these companies goes to what I would refer to, for the lack of better words, to once empowered, always empowered. Mutheu Group, for instance, a listed company, how does it become a small company? How does it become a small company? Should we not, I also miss this point in terms of the regulations. I've looked at the BE code, triple BE code. Can't we, for the purposes of the future, try to look at the ceiling where we say, in terms of regulation, a company or an entity at this level, it must exit being regarded as a small company and completely compete now, because it has got all the resources to compete fairly on their own and independently without the support of government, because government cannot carry all the companies all the way until they are even listed at the stock exchange and become broken, delisted later, and were still there as government. How do we then begin to expand this growth and change the structure of the economy as it stands? In a true sense,
not too much. I want to start with a compliment. That one, we must applaud the department that for the first time we are not focusing DM and the minister on already well established provinces. We are looking into Limpopo, Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape as rural provinces, shying away from relegating our rural province into labor reservoirs. I think it's one compliment that the department must get. Secondly is the allocation of the 95 million steel fund. However, you know, we have raised several times our discomfort around the steel industry. And we want to assume that from where we sit in the department is well aware of the issues that we want to see happening in the steel industry. The issue, DM and the minister, is, look, we, in all our documents, we talk about beneficiation, we talk about localization, we talk about, when are we going to touch and feel it? Even today, 50% of our GDP is still concentrated, of our export is still concentrated on mineral commodities. Our services sector and non-mineral has gone down, has not been able to stabilize over a period of time, and we're still not in that space. It's been too long.
We're talking about radical economic transformation. According to me, it should be defined by the tempo and the cadence of our revolution. That we are seeking to say the tempo and the cadence will no longer be the same as the 10 years ago. That's the radical part of it. Now, we're still sitting there and we're looking at competitively, we want to agree. Yes, South African economy has resilience and the precarious conditions better than all others, but we should be doing more. But we can only do more if we are going to be able to put measures in place that are going to make sure that our export base is stimulated. I think that should be the one. Chair, my question, are we still not having the DG position filled? If yes, when is it going to be done so that we can be able to do it? Secondly, the Deputy Commissioner in the Competition Commission, when is it going to be done? The migration of staff, probably 22 moving and other seconded to other departments. And I note that the AG has recommended, has spoken very well about the department, that the department, even the issue of the clean audit is within your reach. However, are we moving into the right direction to ensure that such issues are done with? But as you are saying, the issues of the coordination, I think so far we're doing very well and we must compliment the department.
Thank you very much. If you will allow me, Minister, Deputy Minister, to just raise the following. You mentioned the Clanwilliam Dam. Now, we heard last week from the Minister of Water Affairs about the new dam to, or rather the expansion of the existing dam to deal with the water shortage in the Western Cape. Will the Department of Economic Development be monitoring that progress? Because part of the concerns that we're having is that rain is seasonal, and we're hoping that we wouldn't subject the economy of the Western Cape to such threats as water shortages in future. That's the first one. My second one is, Honourable Minister, you say we do our oversight as well, and you might be able to help us, because very often when we do our oversight, we don't know how we're going to do oversight over the projects, programs, economic activities of the Department of Economic Development. To give you two examples, that we have the site in Ekandastria, economic development, and we went there, and it would have been nice to get a report to say what is it that the Department of Economic Development is doing on that. Now, honourable members, this is still not official, but to say that for our next oversight, we are looking at going at Saldanha, and I was excited when the minister mentioned the development initiatives that are happening there in the bay. And now it would help us if we have that information. But how exactly are you proposing we deal with that? Just my last question would be related to the IDC. We do know, honourable members, that the NEF would be shifted from the DTI to the EDD, if it has not already happened. Now, the NEF will be reporting to us within another 2 weeks. But we have never had the IDC reporting to us as a committee. Am I right? I don't think we have. Now, what I'm trying to bring through with that, Minister, is that we have these 13 units in DTI, and what we try and do is to rotate them, because we can't have all of them reporting. But we look at how they report to us as well. And I am just thinking it's going to be important to then hear from you how we're going to get the IDC and the NEF as one of its subsidiaries reporting to us as well. Do we just invite them through your office to come and report to us? Because we know that the IDC is a major component of the work that you are doing there. With that, to just conclude by saying that when you mention coming back to us, we have a problem in the committee with our time that we have available. And we are appealing to departments of government to assist us so that we look at innovative ways in which we can still engage without necessarily having a meeting of this nature. You are the department that can help us with that innovative ways, like, for example, we sit here, you sit in Pretoria or wherever, and we have a conference using modern technology. We are concerned that if we look at the challenges for 2018 and the programs that we have before us and the thinking that's happening of spending more time with our constituencies as well, that there are important pieces of information that you can help us with when we monitor the economic progress that we're making as a country, and we feel that it would be helpful, maybe not in this meeting, but even outside of that, that you engage with our chairperson so that we can look at how we will not lose out on this very important work that you have done in these reports, and particularly that you're saying you're focusing on provinces. How are we then able to do our oversight on the interventions and reports that you will be providing? I thank you. We will give you an opportunity to respond and then close this part of the meeting. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Again, with your permission, I'd like to give the Deputy Minister an opportunity to respond to those areas that he would like to respond to, and then I can close on these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. They say, what, the one who pays? So the more you depend on someone to pay for your pipe, for you to play the pipe, who set the conditions all the time. So can you regulate rating agencies? Yes, you can, but will it make an impact? It's like when we regulate in South Africa the credit bureaus, we have regulated them now. But the actual work that they are doing will still continue, because they will still be asked, can I give my son a credit? What is his status? You still have that happening in there. And part of the thing that we'll be looking at, my behavior, whether I keep to work for a long time or do something else. And I can't limit them and say, don't look at that, look at that. In a country, whether you're going to be able to do to pay back what you have done depends on how you perform economically and the factors that affect that performance. So if your economy, how it grows, is going to be affected by certain aspects, if politics is part of that, they will also be looking at that. The stability of your country, the stability of your politics, does affect your growth as you have projected it. It may not be the same, and therefore it means that your capacity to pay may not be able to be like that. Your capacity to pay may not be like that. Sometimes, yes, the rating agencies like credit bureaus will be subjective, because they will be looking at, they will be beginning in understanding your country to have preferences, beginning to see as somebody that look like is going to have more ability than Tebe. You know, or Tebe. So they will have those subjective. And it's not them, it's actually the investor at the back, the perception of the investor in how you behave. You see, so it's going to be very kind of difficult to, unless if you then do grow your economy in such a way that the dependence on the outsider is actually less. It's what is going to actually take us out of that, and that's what we must focus on. And when you focus on what we must do in relation to our country in terms of growth and what is it that's going to happen, they actually nullify the rest of the other things, because my capacity to pay back is there because I'm doing the actual work that I'm supposed to do. So you can't bring in a side issue on it, because it's there. I'm actually addressing the actual issues that I must deal with. So our focus now in terms of that is mostly on making sure that we do the right things and to make sure that our growth, our economy growth is developmental, it addresses the issues that we want to have, and it allow us to even be able to pay for the credit that we have with other people outside. If you focus, or just that focus, just nullify everything, anything else outside. So I think that if we can put that energy on that, we will be able to assist. Do we address rural? What is it that is actually addressing the rural? When we work with the provinces, we work in terms of space. In terms of space, that's the focus that they must give us. Here is our space, what does it have, and what is it that we need to address in this space? And this space that we are having, we both have urban and rural. So as they respond to that, as provinces, we look at that as to how do you address the following issues in the barrier. So we do address the rural intervention. We intervene through the work that we do with the provinces in terms of the advocacy. To some extent, sometimes they even push us even further. Sometimes get invited by municipalities who say to us, "We want you here. Want you to assist us that next week on Thursday I'm going to Ehlanzeni, because Ehlanzeni has given us their own economic plan, and they say, is it addressing the authentic issues?" Some of the issues we've raised with them is, how do you deal with the issues of your Nkomazi? How do you deal with the issues of your bushback refugees? Like, nothing do you have. So those are the discussions that we have in terms of addressing it. Within that, when we say we are going to give, when the minister says the quality of the report, is when you look at the provincial report as you give it, is to say, how does it address the different spatial dynamics in that particular space. So we'll be finding it out of that, because even our agri-park, when we talk about choosing an area in the growth park, and analyzing it. Part of it that we'll be doing is analyzing the various agri-parks, 44 agri-parks, and say, we have said we have done this, how far have we done? We just did a visit of the few, which include Yonkangala, and check as well as the report that comes through the department, does it speak to what is on the ground? So it's part of the ways of checking as to whether the program that we've put in place are going to address that. So that's the kind of interventions that's how we come in relation to your rural development issues. We, in relation to the growth, whether we're going to be able to meet the target, we have to have approximately 600,000 jobs per year, and to meet our NDP targets for 2030, and our NGP, we need to have at least 400,000 per year So it is important that when we look at the measure all the time, we look at what is it that we, what each year, the difference that we are having, how much is it, and are we going to be able to address that? So we do have the comparison between, we do check these figures in relation to what is it that is required of us to do that. And try to trace it as we do our work. The issue around the NEF, I think the minister was just telling me, the work that the incorporation of the NEF into the IDC as a subsidiary, it is still going to have to report the PTIS. But if we want the IDC to come here, the select committee that can ask that, if you ask for it, it's part of our accountability like we do in the NA, for example, they do call the IDC. You ask the IDC to come in. Each time we go and present, we present, and another day they call, even sometimes in a separate day, they ask the IDC to elaborate. Ecandustria will follow up. I remember that part of the strategy for growth for Gauteng, Ecandustria was identified as an area where they'll be focusing on. In fact, they were pursuing us together with DGR to consider it as an area that might be an economic zone by itself. But we'll find out as to how far have we done, because Gauteng normally also put in its own financing in some of the initiatives that they have out. check the operating markets that are doing now. I know that there's been a discussion between them and Mpumalanga on certain aspects, but I'll just check. When are we going to touch and feel beneficiation? that's the focus. That's the major focus. That's why the 9-point plan pushes us to say these are the things that in your growth path you are not focusing on. Can you focus on that? And one of the things the economic zone in Limpopo is addressing that is going on now. Beginning to have a touch and feel of that. But one other interesting development is that there is what we call a youth chamber, on industry, on commerce and industry. So this youth chamber, they have decided to use another strategy that's different to get things to go. So what they do is they mobilize themselves, recruit people who have got know-how in a specific area. And then they start pushing for certain things to happen in a particular part of the target that they are looking at is on the various minerals. They are working on that, on the various minerals. What are the things that need, what are the capacity that they need to build, and how they want to push us into that together with the industry to get them to participate in that. They have done the same thing in other areas and they've been successful even in terms of local content and also localization issues. They've been successful in that, and I think that kind of a drive from the youth can actually be able to take us somewhere.
Chair, thank you. I know you're rushing for time, so let me keep the remarks as brief as possible. On the Competition Commission, we play some role in monitoring their work. But I want to use the example of the reinvestment in BEE to point to the policy challenge that we face. The agreement with the construction industries is not only to support small businesses. Our sense is that over the next number of years, we need large construction companies that are run by black South Africans to be part of the landscape. We've got to normalize the economy. So while our specific focus is on supporting small business, in this case, the challenge is you've got a very large number of small construction companies that are black owned. You don't have any of the top 7, 8, or any of the top 10 that are black owned. And so the focus of those partnerships is to lift the turnover of a smaller number of black companies to get them to be the big players so that when you do the major infrastructure programs where size matters, where you can't, the state can't subcontract to 100 small players. The state normally have one large construction company that in terms subcontract. So how have we dealt with the issue of small business then? With each of the companies, and I'm not going to mention the specific names, but the details are available. So a company like WBHO has 3 black-owned companies that it must support. And it must grow those 3 to have a turnover equivalent to 25% of WBHO's turnover, which is quite massive. These 3 in turn must each have 3 smaller black-owned companies that they mentor and support. So yes, you will find larger companies beginning to develop, but we think that's not a bad idea. We think in the construction industry where scale is so important, it's necessary. It mustn't be at the expense of not also focusing on the smaller players. So whether we've got the balance right there or not, we'd be keen to get some feedback. But that's basically the strategy, to build and develop larger black-owned construction companies in that sector. I do think, though, Honourable Member, you've raised a very interesting idea that has been in the discussion, both informally and increasingly formally, that there should be a limit to how much any one individual can benefit from a black empowerment status. It's not to cap people's participation in the economy, but it's to say that before you get this extra benefit that BEE brings, you've got to be able to show that the cumulative benefit you've got over a number of years don't exceed a certain threshold. Of course, that's not policy yet. It will be a good debate to have. I know that there are some big meetings towards the end of June and early July that will no doubt also want to look at that. And if, in fact, we are to look at a broad-based system, there's got to be a limit to how much any one person can take from the system. So I think the concept's a good one, but we need now a bit more policy work to be done on that. On the question around localization, I think DM has covered that. I would simply make the point, in addition to the points you've made, that when we look at the steel fund, that's going to be hopefully a significant contributor to ensuring that we've got a value chain that uses local iron ore. So it's a bigger discussion about beneficiation. We've had some successes. We now have about 12% or so of the world's catalytic converters are located in South Africa, and they use platinum in the production of, call it the exhaust systems of cars. We, of course, a lot of our coal is beneficiated through Eskom. And iron ore, fairly significant, but as the commodity boom increased prices, more raw iron ore got exported externally. So our work in the steel industry is really to try to hold on to increasing the share of local iron ore. A lot more needs to be done. It's beyond the scope of the discussion now to share with the committee our learnings and what we've seen about the problems and challenges of implementing beneficiation. But one key one is the question of what's the price that local players pay. They've got to pay global market prices. They're dead in the water. They are unable to beneficiate significantly. So there's some work being done now by government to see how can you have a concessional pricing regime for South African producers or producers located in South Africa. On the staffing issues, after the passing away of the late Kumaran Naidu last year, we just wanted a period of stability, bed-down systems, before we launch the big search for a new DG, and I think we're basically there now. So I think we will be giving more attention to that. On the Deputy Commissioner, we appointed the Deputy Commissioner of the Competition Commission in November last year. The Act requires one Deputy Commissioner, but we can go beyond that. I am reviewing a proposal for a second Deputy Commissioner, which would also help with succession planning, long-term planning in the Competition Commission. On the migration of staff that is set out, we've got fewer vacancies now than before, partly because budgets have been cut across the state. Our challenge is we can fill any number of people. But the question is, do I have staff that I can assign? If I'm dealing with the ratings agencies, can I just ask the DG, has he got people that he can put into a meeting with Moody's who can compellingly deal with the issues? Now, that's not a function of how many vacancies you fill. That's the function of the quality of people you attract and keep inside the state. We have centers of excellence in the IDC, in the Competition Commission, in parts of ITAC. But we more than just the focus on vacancies is to try to improve the overall skill level and the kind of top-class professional that we attract. We only have 7 vacancies at the moment in the department. And the question would be, how do we use that cleverly? Can we bring in the kind of high-level skills that we need? So in the annual report and in the APP, we've said we need to rely more on flexible systems. Agree with Wits University, for example, that some of their academics should be seconded to government to work as, you know, they've got a good engineering faculty, we've got an infrastructure program. They've got a good economics department. We've got a series of policy reviews that we do. So part of what we want to do is deepen the quality of the staff. In the past, we've chased numbers. We need to chase capacity more broadly inside government. On the Glen William Dam, once the project is, or any dam that is built in the Western Cape, once the project is included in the national infrastructure plan, Chairperson, then we will monitor it. On Saldanha, we'll be happy to provide the information before the committee goes on a site visit, if you choose Saldanha as a site visit. On the IDC, Deputy Ministers answered the main issue, which is, please ask, I think they would be happy to come. They did in fact come for the 2016 annual report, which gave the committee, the select committee, an opportunity to open up and ask any questions. So they've been there. I do think that it may be helpful to think without perhaps prescribing, but there may be value with some of the entities of thinking whether there shouldn't be joint committees between the NA and the NCOP to get the portfolio committee and select committee perhaps to jointly deal with this, because we want to make sure we bring senior people and that they are accountable, that they are available. So if there's a, you know, an annual meeting where there's a serious discussion, that could be helpful. But of course, we still remain available to encourage them to properly account. I like your idea about innovative ways to stay connected, and perhaps, Chair, we should experiment with this. Perhaps one or two of the meetings we should, even if we just simply start by simple Skyping people in until proper video conference facilities are developed. And there are, of course, video conference facilities available in departments. So if the select committee was to be open to the idea, we could explore the feasibility of a select committee meeting being held inside 120 Plain Street where the video conference facilities are set up. So that would make it easier to stay in touch. So for an IDC CEO, it would mean giving 2.5 hours of his time as opposed to writing off an entire day because of the travel involved. So then we keep our top managers working and accountable. So that may be, there's a chance for the select committee to set the tone to get Parliament to move into the 21st century. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister, your team. Let me rush us through the one part that I want you to be part of, which is, members, I present to you now that we in the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development have considered Budget Vote 28, which is on the economic development, and the Annual Performance Plan 2017-18 of the Economic Development Department, and therefore wish to report to the House that we have concluded our deliberations thereon. Can I get a proposal that such a report be considered? Honourable Faber, I wish to resume Mr. Condit, then by Honourable Timonier. Thank you very much. That means that we are now ready to debate it in the House. Thank you, Minister and your team. We will continue to just do some of our domestic responsibilities. Honourable members, if I look at the agenda that Martin sent to us, what we need to do now is to look at that oversight report on Mpumalanga. Are we in a position to adopt that report? Have we looked at it?
No.
Who said no? I'm really serious. I didn't say. Can we get a proposal for the Honourable Timonier? Can we get?
I move for the adoption of the report.
The adoption of the Mpumalanga Oversight Report. Honourable Faber, are you seconding or? Can we get somebody to second to the adoption of the report? Honourable Ntele, is there opposition to that? No. Okay. Honourable members, it doesn't mean that the topic is closed. All right? We can still engage each other on that, as we do all the time. Thank you very much. So that report is accepted. Then we have the minutes of our meeting of the 23rd May. I've looked at the minutes with grace. It wasn't Slupeka. On the first page, we have the attendance register. It was myself, the Honourable Mtetwa, Honourable Dikhale, Honourable Timunye, Mahwebu, and Faber that were in that meeting. We had apologies from the Honourable Bauda, Lond, and Chai. Honourable Mtebe and Honourable Chibangu were marked as absent. Then on page 3, we have the opening and welcome, the Minister Kubai was here herself, and she presented to us the political part, and the DG presented the plan on the Department of Energy that we have on page 4 and page 5. On page 6, honourable members, on page 5, we have deliberations. I've looked at the deliberations. There is nothing that will compromise us, other than the Grand Inga project, where we're saying that they must come and report to us in another meeting on that project. Then the resolutions that we had was precisely on the Grand Inga, and then also on requesting them for a report on transformation in the oil retail industry. Remember, it comes from our oversight at that filling station in the Woodbank area. Then we also had conversations about the nuclear program, and we are all in agreement that it should meet fiscal policy and it must be transparent. We look at the IRP and the IEP, and we are saying to them it should be finalized in time, and they should look at sustainability. Then we adopted the minutes of the last meeting as well as the report, the adopted committee program. Can I, with that, ask whether we have a proposal for acceptance of that minute? Honorable Timunia, seconded by Honorable Mahwelo. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. That deals with that part of it. Just one announcement that struck me. The one is that we are debating in the Management Committee. We've decided in the Management Committee to propose to this meeting that our next oversight, we have a choice between Free State and Western Cape. And who have been Eastern Cape already, because we rotate.
Okay.
So we felt, let's do Western Cape, because we're taking Parliament to the people in the Eastern Cape. And in Western Cape, we then said, there's all these projects that are happening in the Saldanha-Friedenberg area. Let's then look at that, and we'll take it up to, what's the name of that township? Atlantis. Now, we're presenting that to you, members, on behalf of the Management Committee. Is there anyone who's opposed to that, or are we in agreement that we should proceed? The date of the oversight would be in line with the program that the NCOP has to develop, so we don't have a date yet. We can then, we've asked our support staff to start engaging the department, as I've engaged the Department of Economic Development now, so that we can work on a program timelessly and not put pressure on our staff. And that's why we're presenting the principle to you now. I don't see any disagreement with that. Okay. Then I don't think we have anything other than that. Honourable Members, thank you very much for your participation. I did receive apologies from the Honourable Lond and Honourable Tihale, who had to recuse themselves from the committee. We will, during the course of the next 7 days, make available to you a draft report on the International Study Tour. Thank you very much.